morning, everybody, and welcome to the Localization Fireside Chat. This is Robin Ayoub, and I am the host of this podcast. We're about a year and a half in our initiative of developing the Localization Fireside Chat. We just created a WhatsApp group. For those who are not participating in the WhatsApp group, I highly encourage you to go to our page on LinkedIn, find the WhatsApp link, and participate in the WhatsApp community for the Localization Fireside Chat. It's a pretty good place for people to connect and find answers and connect with colleagues from the industry as well. Today, I have the honor of hosting a group of amazing ladies. They work a very important job in our world. It's medical interpretation. And the topic of today, it is so important because I did some research on medical interpretation before the call. And I find out that according to NH, that the errors, medical errors caused by miscommunication are about 87%. 27% of those, or close to 30% of those, are caused by miscommunication related to languages. So it is absolutely paramount and important that we have a clear communication between patient and doctor, patient and health providers. And the ladies around the table today, around the virtual table today, that's what they do. Life-saving services that they provide day in, day out for those who needs it most, which is the patients who require attention, medical attentions. Before we get into the topic of the hour, if you don't mind, let's start by introducing the panel. And I'll start with Mila, and then we'll go from there. Mila, if you don't mind, just tell people who you are, where you're located, what do you do, and then we'll go to Tatiana and the rest of the team.
My name is Ludmila Golovin, and I am the CEO of Masterword Services. I started my career as a professional interpreter, and I think it's over 33 years at this point, or even maybe more since I started interpreting first, and been focusing on providing interpreting in healthcare, education, government services, long experience working with the healthcare industry.
And where are you located, Mila?
The headquarters are in Texas, but we work nationally. So I'm in Houston, Texas.
Nice to meet you the first time, and glad that you can join us. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Tatiana, if you don't mind.
Great. Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me today. I am Tatiana Sestari. I am located in Tampa, Florida. I have been in the interpreting industry for 12 years, so a little less than Amira. I'm an interpreter. Typically, the type of interpreting I do is mainly remotely. Phone interactions or via video like we're doing today. And that's only part of how I serve in language services. The other part is more in a different role, writing and helping hospitals and different entities or stakeholders in the industry to provide best services and using best practices when working with different linguists, interpreters, translators, etc. And let's see how I got in the profession. Well, my story, I always say it's not as inspiring because many times it has to do with something related to your family or something that you lived as an immigrant. But in my case, it was more of something that, you know, there was a big change, professional change in my career. I was, before entering the interpreting industry, I was doing research, just biological sciences research. In pharmacy and pharmacology. I liked languages, and I came from Venezuela with that background, and I was here in the States with that. And due to some changes in the laboratory where I was, I had the opportunity to then start looking for something else, and I found a remote interpreting company, and I started working with them. And I started as an interpreter, and I've worn many hats after that. So that's basically my story.
Well, nice to meet you, Tatiana. Thank you for joining us today. And I hope everybody gets something out of this call today, you, the panelists, and our audience. And keeping within the same momentum of introduction, Natalia, would you mind introducing the audience to yourself, if you don't mind?
Of course. Thank you. My name is Natalia Mitareva, and geographically I'm in Northern Ohio, Akron area, and I started my career first before I moved to the U.S. as instructor of interpreting and translation. But when I came here, the first job I had was coordinating interpreting and translation services for a refugee resettlement agency here in Akron, and that's when I started doing medical interpreting as well for refugees who spoke Russian. And that inspired me to find ways, first of all, how to train bilinguals who come to this country with different backgrounds and understand that now they are in the capacity to help their communities and become interpreters. And as I went along that path, I realized that what's important is to establish the fact that interpreters are a profession with its own standards, with its own requirements, ethics, and the crowning point for any profession is existence of certification. So currently, I'm the executive director of the Certification Commission for Healthcare Interpreters. I was one of the founding commissioners in 2009, and that's what my job for the last 14, 15 years has been, is to establish those standards, to distinguish between individuals who say, oh, I speak two languages, I can do anything, and individuals who are actual professional interpreters.
Well, nice to meet you, Natalia, and definitely the standards discussion will come out through our conversation today, and I'm glad to have you on with us as well to explain that to the audience. And if you don't mind, Irissa, I want to mention something before you do your introduction. You're the cause of this particular, you're the one who came up with the idea of this panel, which I thank you for that, and thank you for joining me today. It was a pleasure meeting you by coincidence on LinkedIn, and thank you for being a support of our, for my channel, the Localization Fireside Chat. If you don't mind, Irissa, would you mind introducing the audience to yourself?
Yes, yeah, sure. I thought I would be the last one. So, Jeannie, I would say the famous expression, last but not least, but I'm going to continue introducing myself. It's an honor to be here, to be with these amazing ladies that myself, I have admired them throughout my career in interpreting industry. I maybe have this kind of feeling that I start things by coincidence, like I met you, Robin. I was a pre-med student, so I was doing rotation in medical setting here in Houston. I'm located in Houston, Texas as well. So when I was there, there was a patient in emergency room that spoke Albanian. The interpreter, it was supposed to be in person, logistically was not arriving on time, so they were like all freaking out. At that time, then I started the video remote and the OPI, the over the phone was not like very common, so it was mostly in person. So I just jumped in. I know Albanian, I'm from Albania, I know medical terminology, I'm studying medicine, so I should help, and I started helping, and I loved it. And I loved it, and I thought about, you know, why not? While I'm in school, I can work as an interpreter, because people were telling me, this is a profession. People do this and get paid, because I thought they just people take their brother, sister, daughter, son, when they go to doctor's appointment to interpret for them. And I've done for my parents many, many times. So I want to, since I'm here publicly, thank Mila, because she was one of the main one, actually the main one who said yes to me when I wanted to start this offshore company providing language service in medical interpreting, because at the same time I wanted to help patients here in US, but I wanted to integrate offshore team, because I come from a country with opportunities are limited, and especially for bilinguals and people who study languages. So I was like, why not connect the dots and have this opportunity. 2020 came and everybody went remote, and thank God we were in the right time, the right place. So currently I work as an interpreter, and I've made this like as a commitment to myself that no matter where I am, I'm going to do some hours as an interpreter, because I love it. It brings me joy, brings me satisfaction to help people every single day. But at the same time, I hope, you know, offshore team to get to the standards of becoming interpreters and to help support the demand and advocate for language access.
Thank you, Irissa, for the lovely introduction, and thanks for joining us today. Thanks for you taking the time and being with us. Save the best for last, Jeannie, if you don't mind. Sorry that you have to go last. Somebody has to, I guess. But thanks for being with us. If you don't mind, Jeannie, give some introduction to the audience about yourself. Jeannie, we can't hear you.
How about now?
Now we can hear you.
Okay, great. Well, minor audio issues, but we solved it. So it's a pleasure to be here. I am really honored to be a part of this discussion. So thank you, Robin, for inviting me. My name is Ginny Bromberg, and these days I am the founder and president of Bromberg & Associates. We're a language and technology solutions company. We work in over 200 languages, and healthcare is one of our main sectors. The second company that I'm a part of is Linguist Education Online. We are online testing, training, and since 2020, conference company. We provide conferences twice a year, and we train and test healthcare interpreters. So I got location-wise. I am in Michigan, though during the winter, you're going to find me in Florida.
When I grew up, I want to be like you. I want to move from Toronto to Florida. It's too cold.
I know lots of good places, so hit me up. I'll tell you where to go. And Tatiana can also advise. But I got into this industry also, as you say, sometimes people get into it by accident. And I did. I was working for a nonprofit. I had a colleague who was monolingual, but he kept encouraging me by saying, you speak two languages, you should be an interpreter. Little did I know back then, there was more to it. But I tried it. I loved it. I became a court-certified interpreter in 2004 and started my company in 1999, Bromberg & Associates. Linguist Education Online came out of a sheer need in 2009, and I'm still in this industry, and I love it every day.
Well, I'm glad that you're with us, and I'm glad this collective wisdom, knowledge, experience that we have around the panel today will help shed some light to those who don't understand and don't know medical interpretation or how it works, how can they take advantage of it, how it would be beneficial to their health in a lot of cases. So the follow-up question after we finish the introduction, for those who don't know, and I know when you're close to a topic, you think it's rudimentary, you know, it's too simple of a question, but some people don't know. So let's help explain what is medical interpretation for those who don't know. And let me start by asking Mila that question, if you don't mind, Mila. Just the basic description, what is medical interpretation?
Well, every field has specialty terminology. You know, it's the same, what is educational interpreting? What is healthcare interpreting? What is legal interpreting? So it's interpreting in the healthcare setting for between a patient and a provider. Medical interpreting has a lot of additional specializations, just as doctors do. You know, there may be trauma interpreting, there may be mental health interpreting, there may be pediatric or all different settings that have their own special requirements and their own needs and require additional training, actually, depending on where and how you interpret in the medical setting.
Okay. And Ginny, does that explain it? Do you have anything to add to that description?
I think Mila's explanation was very succinct and to the point.
Okay.
And interpreting. Yeah, go ahead.
And no, I was just kind of wondering here, like, I know Natalia spoke about standards. No, beside describing the profession itself being somebody who facilitate communication between patient and provider that are, you know, at a very, and as you mentioned earlier in the introduction, many of us, including myself, done some interpretation for our family or, you know, for close ones that they go to the hospital or go to see a doctor and they don't know what to tell them. But am I certified to do it? Do I have I have basic knowledge, but do I have, you know, enough knowledge to be stamped that it is what I'm saying is correct and is true? Not necessarily, because although I'm trying to convey as much of my ability, you know, the right message to whoever is providing the service, a lot of times maybe I'm missing something. Now, I know Natalia spoke about standards, so let's combine what is a medical interpreter from a standardization perspective. Who can take that on? You want to take it on?
Hey, since you mentioned the standards, right, I want to jump right in. And I want to say is that, like with every profession, we have people who love something and they become, you know, good advocates for it and passionate about it, and they could do a good job. And then there are professionals who do it as part of their living and, you know, follow the rules. I want to give an example, like, I bake very good brownies, you can trust me, but it doesn't make me necessarily the, you know, provider of brownies for the rest of the United States, and so I'm not going to say that I'm the best brownie baker. And the same thing applies to interpreting. There are many individuals who speak two languages, and they understand, mm-hmm. but what happens when you're just a what I call bilingual person is you listen to somebody and then you restate it and you add your own story. In other words, you're retelling. You are conveying what you understood, what you think is important. Interpreters is a totally different thing. Interpreter is the voice of that speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And to mm-hmm. be the voice, obviously you understand you need to be intellectually savvy to be a voice of any speaker, from the neurosurgeon to mm-hmm. the patient who has elementary education, right? The mm-hmm. person who speaks your language from the large city or from a small rural community. The person who understands that in United States, in healthcare, this particular word has a specific meaning. Another example, and then I'll, you know, pass the mic. I like to tell, you know, usual individuals who don't know about interpreting, like, ask a bilingual person how would explaining to you how they would explain the term, you have a football-shaped eye, right? Mm-hmm. In the United States, a football-shaped eye that the doctor will use to describe astigmatism is this. It's an okay. oval. Yeah. But coming from the rest of the world, to me, a football is a soccer ball. Mm-hmm. And so the interpreter will be the one who will actually convey the meaning, saying that, oh, it's an almond shape, it's a mango shape, depending on the language and the culture. While the bilingual will just say football shape and let the person think like, oh, it's round. Okay. Well, it's round. What's wrong with my eye? So that's kind of like what the interpreting is about. Understanding all of that. And it's, you need to have training, as Mila said, and like Jeannie is doing, and you have to have testing, and you have, because there is a safety issue here. We're not interpreting to tell a good story. We're interpreting right, to sure. allow people to save somebody's lives or to become better. And I'll stop here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, can I add to this just a couple words? Additional complications are, and those are the things interpreters are trained for. How do you interpret in mental health setting? How do you know when you need to interpret somebody's complete rumble? What about rape investigation? How do you know, and a forensic investigation, how do you know how to interpret there? And then many times also people will not say things in front of their parents or in front of their family members. So a mother in front of her children mention something that deals with potential domestic violence or potential abuse case? Probably not. Many times people won't mention their diagnosis in front of family members. So there are many reasons and a lot of in-depth training that interpreters go through. And I like to mention, Natalia mentioned brownie cookies. I normally use an example of the difference between bilingual and professional interpreters are between being able to drive a car, which most of us can, and repair a car. And I wouldn't even know where to start.
Absolutely. And so based on this, it seems to be people are mentioning training and certification. I want to move the mic, if you don't mind, to Arissa or Tatiana, any one of you, taking on the subject of training. Where do individual interpreters get trained? What kind of training? And what is the certification or the testing look like? Is there a periodical testing, or is it just one time and it's over? If you don't mind, explain to the audience what that training and certification look like.
I can start, and then Arissa, and I know many of you can chime in because we all have expertise in the area. So I will start by saying that training and education of interpreters is not necessarily something that's fully standardized. When I say this, if we take the example of a hospital, and when you have a hospital hires nurses, they know they come from a program that was accredited or validated for that type of setting or that type of study. And when you, it doesn't matter if it's from university ABC, college X, Y, and Z, they come with certain basic information. Of course, there's some, you know, there's some variability, but in general terms, you have a standardized program that will make you that nurse. When you graduate, you have that title, or maybe you take certain exams and now you're ready, at least here in the United States, to perform as a nurse. In the healthcare industry, interpreting healthcare interpreting industry, we're still trying to develop that. We're still in diapers in the sense that many times training and education of healthcare interpreters is not fully regulated and it's not fully standardized. There are many programs in colleges and universities, but that's not the route that the vast majority of interpreters or interpreter trainers take in order to then become healthcare interpreters. So you have many different types of trainings. Here in the United States, there are certain minimum standards, and even the National Council on Interpreting Healthcare has standards for training of interpreters, healthcare interpreters. And then from there, you know, trainings vary from X number of hours, like 40 hours to 180, or college courses, university, you know, even master's, doctorate degrees, like you have everything in between. Now, here in the United States, we have different bodies that offer a national certification, and I'm sure Natalia can speak more about that, of course. And that's for healthcare interpreting, and both spoken and sign language interpreters can take those exams. So we also have a sign language interpreting certification through the Registry of Interpreters for the Deaf. And we also have some state certifications for sign language interpreters. However, they're not necessarily specific to healthcare. So many sign language interpreters are getting the healthcare, national healthcare certification through the other bodies. They're also, in some states of the United States, it's required to have a license as an interpreter to provide services in that particular state. However, that is true for, I'm going to say, approximately 18 to 20 states, but not all of the states. That's a model that was, I consider licensure a good thing. However, for remote interpreting, it's not as easy to handle, because if I serve all 50 states, imagine how difficult that is to really have licenses in all of these states and the paperwork, renewal, all that kind of stuff. So that's, I think, in general terms, what we have. And if I missed anything, ladies, I know you have plenty to share.
Larissa, anything to add on your side in on that topic?
Yes, sure. Because I kind of, through my story, I went from being in a situation to becoming an interpreter. So there is a journey. And another reason that we share in common is because we want to bring that journey to a standard way and of, you know, training interpreters. And we have been in conferences, and that has been an emphasis of like training trainers but and training interpreters, because at the end of the day, interpreters are not just a luxury item to have in a hospital setting, not something that we might need to use it. They're mandatory. To be there for many reasons that we mentioned earlier. So I think that training currently is done most of like private companies. So like each LSB does provide their training for their interpreters and focus a lot of effort in training their, you know, interpreters. But in currently having them already trained, it's not the normal path. So like it's not like Tatiana mentioned nurses or doctors or everybody in the healthcare setting that would have a prior education before entering into the healthcare. If your interpreters is like mostly this LSB, or even the staff, internal staff in the hospital, will would try supply. To get them trained so and try to get them, you know, meeting the standards and helping them progress besides just a passion about languages and serving. So I come from a kind of different perspective because of remote global interpreters. And if we're saying that in US there is not a standard way, imagine globally. So it's kind of hard,
you
and we're trying to meet that gap
example.
And to close it as much
starting
as possible where we can
qualify
and have everybody that is qualified to
so
serve.
Daddy,
because how delicate
never,
the topic is, healthcare is like the most delicate topic
serves.
That you can interpret.
They never were
if you deal with
languages.
People's lives. So.
Since
absolutely.
2021,
let's go around the room, the virtual room here, and talk a little bit about the academic requirements to become an interpreter. You know, there are several programs. Somebody mentioned earlier there are several programs I'm aware of. Like, you have to have your
like
language degree first, then you go to another post-secondary education and take on an interpreter. That's a more intense program, I would say.
Gap.
More like a live simultaneous interpreter where you sit in a booth with your digital equipment and you're, you know, talking simultaneously with the speaker. I think what we're talking about here is a consecutive sort of an interpretation, you know, where the speaker speaks, it pauses, then the translation takes place or the interpretation takes place, and then we relay the message back to the patient in this case, or the doctor, and it doesn't matter who's speaking. So from an academic requirement, so does, in your opinion, do you need to set some standard? What, you know, if you were to say, look, it's a blank sheet of paper, I want to design my standard of how to deliver the services that you guys are involved in, what would be your wishful thinking in this case, academically and more of an experience? So do you need them like to have a post-secondary education, or who can start with this discussion? Ginny, you want to go? Natalia?
I suggest Ginny goes first because you've been silent for a while, and then I'll jump in. So Ginny,
that's
go
right.
ahead.
Ginny, go for it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically what you're saying is those minor languages with less population in them, they're harder to satisfy when it comes to finding people to do the job. Am I reading this correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it is. I mean, especially when we're talking like indigenous languages too. I mean, you know, you're right. It depends on the year, depends on what's going on in the world. The immigration level to Canada, United States, and the European countries, the flux of that immigration could change in terms of its nature, in terms of the population, in terms of the numbers, etc. And that could cause, you know, many issues in terms of supporting those immigration waves, medically, refugee status, and, you know, any other involvement. Because when you leave your country and go to another country, which most of us did around the table here, you got to establish a brand new life in all of its aspects. Medical is one of them, but in all of its aspects, if you, God forbid, you need a lawyer, or if you, God forbid, you need a, you know, you go to get your car fixed. I don't know, but you're not going to be able to find anybody to understand you unless you communicate in those languages, and which is poses a big challenge. Anybody wants to chime in on the topic of the accreditation or the academic requirements for the interpretation before I move on to another topic?
Let me jump in here. So as Ginny was saying, because of the variety of language we need in healthcare settings in the United States, it is really hard to create academic programs in the United States, which even though, yes, of course, there are some languages taught at colleges, but if you look at the number of languages, you will not find there Burmese, you will not find there Farsi, you will not find there even Swahili. I think there are like two universities that teach Swahili, right? And Swahili is like a whole continent is a lingua franca for, right? So what do you do in that thing? And that's where these private training companies come in to fill in the gap to address two things. One thing is knowledge about healthcare in the United States, which is, as you know, some of you with the luxury of national insurance, health insurance, don't even understand what the heck we're going through here. So it has this kind of aspect, but there are also specific laws that regulate, including privacy, which are very strict in the United States compared to many other countries, including language access, which is a requirement government, and the provision of interpreters is required. So there are many specifics to the United States. So there are many courses, including online, that could provide you that knowledge base foundation for becoming an interpreter. And then there are some courses that address your skills. Can you do consecutive interpreting? Can you do simultaneous interpreting? And what we pride ourselves at CCHI is that we have this certification that is available to interpreters of any language, because we created a new way of testing your ability to interpret. Regardless of the language, we all have these foundational cognitive skills of converting language meaning from one language to another. So we have the credential that is called Course CHI Performance that is available for interpreters of Burmese, Pashto, Kenya, Rwanda, you name it, because we're testing the skills moved from your bilingualism. So we're really getting at, can you interpret? And then we get the information about, do you speak Farsi? Do you speak Burmese, etc.? And that's why academics, I don't think we'll ever get to the point that we'll have bilingual training for interpreters in the United States for those languages of lower instance or lower demand, right? Yep. But we do have a mechanism to acknowledge that they can do it.
Yeah. Now, thanks for the clarification, Natalia, and thanks for everybody who contributed to this answer, which is, you know, you're absolutely correct. When you're trying to cover 300 languages, you know, it's tough to zoom in on a specific, you know, language and do ubiquitous across. And what complicates things a little bit more for you in the U.S. is you have multiple levels of governments. And as Tatiana was saying, you know, if somebody needs to certify in 50 states and manage that on an individual basis, it's a full-time job on its own just to manage the 50 certifications. When are they due? What do I need to do to renew it? It's a tough job. That's why it may be a national initiative. It's a little bit more comprehensive in terms of delivering, you know, that I don't want to call it insurance coverage, but at least it gives you some comfort level that these individuals have passed through some sort of an accreditation or some sort of a certification process. So which brings me to two more topics, and I'm cognizant of the time. Two more topics. One is the financial aspect of the industry that you guys are operating in. From an interpreter perspective, if I was an interpreter and if I was to do this full-time job, am I able to make a living, or am I doing this, you know, as a volunteer? And, you know, everybody at the end of the day needs to do the economics of how they're going to live. And the other part of it is from an entrepreneur perspective, and I see we have a few entrepreneurs around the room here. Are you able to, you know, successfully manage a profitable business, you know, providing the service? And I want to start with Mila, if you don't mind. We'll start with Mila first, and then we'll go around the clock just to give your opinion on the financial side, knowing that the localization industry in general for the past two decades have gone through a lot of commoditization, meaning that the price pressure is down, not many people are making too many profits, but I'd like to hear your perspective on the financial aspect nevertheless.
So commoditization is a risk, but it's a risk in every profession if you don't have specialization. The more expertise you have, the more you are the expert, right? So if you, let's say in the healthcare setting, if you have a true understanding of a particular medical field, and you can study it as an interpreter. If you have true understanding of the terminology, if you have true understanding of the differences. In some languages, terminology doesn't exist. Jeannie mentioned Mayan languages, K'iche, Kekchi. They don't have a word for MRI. They don't even have a word. It's very difficult to even explain this closely in the language. The terminology doesn't exist. So the more specialized you are and the more of an expert you are, the more you can dictate a higher price, and the more your expertise are needed. So same, and then in terms of making a living, when I initially started, I didn't know I could make a living. I didn't even know how to ask to get paid. But eventually, and with experience, I think the law of a fair exchange is something that is very important to be fairly compensated for what you do. And I think there may be others who can comment on this as well.
All right. So I guess let's go to Tatiana. I haven't heard from Tatiana for a while. Tatiana, if you were an interpreter, let me ask you a direct question, and you were to forecast, you know, the annual income for that particular interpreter who's full-time working as a medical interpreter, is there any light that you can shed on that topic? What would that be like?
Well, most of the time what I see is that there are different factors that affect that number. As you say, whether you're full-time or part-time, whether you're a contractor or your employee, what languages you work in, like what your language pairs are, how many of those language pairs you can provide. If it's a language of higher demand and you also have an industry that can meet that demand, let's say Spanish, it's a type of payment or an amount that may be different from Dari, which has higher demand now than before, but it's not as easy to, the workforce is not there as it is for Spanish. So all of those factors affect, and how many, and also you need to take into account your education level. Like if you only have high school or you have a college degree or postgraduate education, et cetera. So all of these factors tend to affect that number. It's hard to just tell you a number because that varies tremendously in this industry. I don't know if I should say fortunately or unfortunately, but it goes from anywhere. And you also have to consider the fact that the majority of those who provide language access services as linguists in the United States are actually located outside of the United States. So you have different pay scales depending on where you're located. Okay, so I'm not
going to ask you, actually.
I'm gonna go into what's fair or unfair because we can be here all day.
Yep.
However,
no,
I will tell you that it, of course, is different, but you may have people who work from the United States who need X amount of money to survive here in the United States versus in other countries where you may need less or other countries where you may need more.
That's right.
Some cases in Europe are like that. So, you know, you have variety. I can tell you that someone who is a Spanish-speaking interpreter in healthcare may make less than someone who's a Japanese-speaking interpreter in the United States. So it varies.
From my understanding, Tatiana, I'm hearing that, which is the same trend we're seeing in every service-based economy, where, you know, there are some people are moving work to lower cost jurisdictions around the world where they can. Obviously, people want to run their business in a profitable manner. If there's a staff that can do the work from another country cheaper and you still achieve the same quality, why not? I mean, it's not, we work in the remote world anyway. So I'm assuming this is happening in your world as an interpretation, et cetera, right? Especially for those remote projects.
Yeah, and it has been happening for many years in interpreting. I think in translation is even, people don't even talk about it anymore because it's so standardized.
Part of the process.
In translation is part of the process. You get translated materials from everywhere in the world.
Yep.
But now we're talking a lot more about that in the healthcare interpreting realm. But I wanted to say, I think it's important for everybody to understand here that the topic about finances and all that in healthcare interpreting here in the United States, it's seen in different ways depending on the stakeholder. And I just wanted to just briefly list what those stakeholders are. And everybody, if I miss anyone, please jump in. But not only we need to consider the patient, which is patient and healthcare provider or the care team, we also need to consider, you know, the linguist, whether it's an interpreter or a translator that's providing translated materials to the person who needs it. We also have bilingual staff that may be qualified because in the United States, there are ways to provide language concordant care. We also have service managers, those who manage interpreters, whether they're in a hospital or somewhere else, different organizations. We have, I have my cheat sheet here. We have healthcare interpreter educators and, you know, professors, instructors, etc. We also have the certification and licensure bodies. They have all of these stakeholders. I'm mentioning all these because we all have maybe a common goal, but we have different interests, and we provide and see the financial aspect in different ways. Mm-hmm. And then we have, you know, language access regulatory entities might be due, you know, the laws, but also, you know, federal regulations or state regulations, but we also have hospital accreditations and all that. They sure. also play a part in, yep. in this whole industry. And then, of course, investors. We have investors that may be part of a language service company or investors of a hospital. And they may be part of those entities or not. They yeah. may be just providing financial support to some of these entities in different ways. So I wanted to just mention that so that everybody sure. has.
And thanks for the thorough explanation.
A bigger view
yeah, that's good.
Of this.
If I can unmute,
absolutely.
I can add more
now,
yes.
cognizant of the time, I still have
to,
one topic
me,
I haven't talked about, if you don't mind, like 10 seconds each. Everybody talks about AI
world,
nowadays, everywhere you go. It doesn't matter what job you're in. You hear AI, everywhere
can
you go.
Imagine
it sounds like it's the flavor of the day, but it's more than the flavor of the day. It feels like
in mental health
it's here to stay. It's impacting all,
delivery,
all aspects of our lives. If you don't mind, Tatiana, while you got
AI,
the mic, and then we'll go around. I kind of doubt it will impact the interpretation, but it's just, you know, just 10 seconds. How is AI impacting you?
Is safer than many other
me in particular, well,
but it's also about
so far
evolving,
I've been able to benefit from it. However, I would
and
say the industry is
how you can
really
position yourself
the industry
to
in multiple ways.
To provide more.
For some, it may be beneficial. For some others, not as beneficial. But I would mm-hmm. say that as everything is part of evolution. And when I say that, it's imagine back when we only had light because we had candles. We use
okay.
only candles to have light in our houses, for example,
mm-hmm,
to
mm-hmm.
light our houses. Then when electricity started replacing all of these candles, the industry had to do something about it, right? So maybe some lose their jobs, but they also evolved to now
sure.
adapt to the new technology. I'm not saying, again, one thing is right or wrong. I think everything has a balance, and we can get pros and cons with,
sure.
with everything.
Mila, you want to add anything to this? You're on mute.
Okay. I think AI, again, will have the same impact. I like to compare it to the transportation industry. With the invent of cars and airplanes, actually transportation exploded as
sure.
an industry. However, you know, horses still have their place, but we travel a lot more with new ways of transportation. I think the role of human will remain, in my opinion, as a critical role. And I believe that the amount of communication, actually there were some numbers, Common Sense Advisory published that we today, the translated content represents than 0.5%. I think it's 0.000 something of a percent based as compared to the content that's generated today. So I think the amount of content being translated will have an exponential explosion. That means that the amount of content that is critical that requires human validation or will require a human to be present or actually be the one doing the communication will increase significantly. So yes, AI is impacting our industry, and I love the impact. It's actually, you know, we see growth.
Absolutely. Jenny, you want to add a couple of points on this one, or are you good? Go ahead. Absolutely. Thank you, Jenny. Natalia, anything you'd like to add before we... go to Arisa.
Well, one of the things I want to add is that actually a couple of us here on the call are members of Interpreting Safe AI Task Force, which is working on producing a guidance for all interpreting industry, not just healthcare, on how do we approach and deal with adoption of AI. And the main thing here I want to say is the fact that we need to educate consumers that the new thing is always brighter than the old thing, but you remember what we used as the phones, you know, with those, you know,
dial-up
things, and how the current one uses, and how the current teenagers, they don't use the phone for phone calls, right? So that's what they need to think. And so today, as an interpreter, you need to just be educated yourself about it and
mm-hmm.
continue dispersing the myth that human interpreters are not, can be replaced. Maybe 200 years from now, but I seriously think it's not sooner. Not
yep.
sooner. So anybody who says, because I have been on the calls where they say, 5 years from now, we won't even need you. excuse me, no, that's not going to happen. So that's right. The important thing, to educate the consumers that the hype and the innovation, it's always great, but you need to be realistic that today you still need to work and you still need to interpret accurately and within the understanding of the environment.
100%. Thank you, Natalia, for adding this one. That's very important. I didn't know there was such a an association on, and you guys are involved in it. I appreciate the information you shared here. Irissa, any other points you'd like to add?
Yes, so definitely. Of course, AI is, as you said, the flavor of the day. Sometimes it's intimidating, and especially to interpreters out there, kind of feeling that they're going to lose this opportunity. It's good to hear from leaders
for bringing us together for this conversation.
AI is just going to make things better, easier for end users and interpreters. And at the end of the day, humans cannot, you know, this is a human invention, so it cannot be replacing humans. It's done by us for our benefit, to help us out. And also, I want to touch base a little bit, because I'm very passionate about, you know, the finances of this industry. This is not an industry when you start for a lucrative salary, the main passion. You know, like, you don't go in this language service industry because you know you're going to earn a lot. You go with a big passion to help support one of the things that kind of differentiate us all. We are unique because we speak different languages. Because we speak different languages, we have different mindset, different cultures. So in order to advocate for language adversity and also to help access this languages anywhere, I think this is the main driven force in this industry. And all the interpreters in US or globally, they do it first because they love the industry. Second, they have to specialize. I'm with Mila that as long as they invest on, you know, growing, improving, and learning more, there is no replacement, and shouldn't worry about, you know, a salary at the end of the day, because people will need experts.
Absolutely. Thank you for that clarification, Irissa. I appreciate it. And that brings me to the end of our call. So before we finish, before we stop recording, I want to thank you all for joining me today. I really appreciate your input. I really enjoyed the dialogue. The conversation was amazing to me. I learned a lot. And I hope the audience found it very informative. If you don't mind, any last thoughts, Irissa, you've got the mic. We'll start with you and we'll move to Natalia.
Again, very honored. Very honored to be here. I'm passionate about languages. I love to help people, and I want to bring opportunity where there is not opportunity, obvious. So I'm thankful to share my ideas and to share where I stand. And I hope that this communication, this will send us further. So thank you for the opportunity, Robin. And thank you, everybody, for joining.
No problem. No problem. Natalia?
Well, also echoing Irissa, thank you for the opportunity, because it's really hard to talk about us. We tend to know, like, oh, we interpreters who understand what we're about, but the rest of the world may not get that. I want to, though, still do my appeal to the interpreters by saying that proving that you're a professional starts with saying that you have a credential. I know I'm a certification representative, but if you have that, you have a structure that allows you to advocate for the profession, for better workforce conditions, and for better, you know, financial reimbursement. So that's what we need. But at the same time, just reinforcing what Irissa said, your passion could become your profession, and you don't need to compromise on either.
Thank you, Natalia. Appreciate it. Jenny, thank you. Thank you for joining. I look forward to receiving some information about the online conference and participating if time allows, but I appreciate you being here. Tatiana?
Well, thank you very much, not only for having me here and share the microphone with all of these wonderful professionals. I want to say that to me, it's all about empowering others. So if we were able to do that, if this 40-something minutes or an hour of recording can empower someone else to do something for someone else who needs it, then it's worth it. So I'm very happy and humbled to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Tatiana. Mila?
Thank you for having me, and thank you for this wonderful conversation. I learned a lot as well, so thank you. I would like to encourage the listeners to follow Safe AI Task Force, both on social media, and then it's safeaitf.org on the website for the latest updates. It's actually a collaborative effort across all industry verticals in interpreting for the first time, and even in collaboration with Deaf and Hard of Hearing community. And we're establishing guidelines. And there are some reports, very extensive reports that have been published there, and they're all available for free. So if you're interested, please follow.
Thank you so much, Mila, and thanks, everybody. I hope I didn't miss anybody in the last comment. I think I got everybody. Thank you so much for being with me. To our audience, I want to thank you for listening to this conversation if you're coming in on podcast. If you're watching us on YouTube, thank you as well for watching. And I just want to mention, this is episode number 70. So we've spoken to 70 different episodes, to many experts. Some of them are panels, some of them are individual conversations. The Localization Fireside Chat is a personal initiative by me. It's not funded by anybody. It's not supported by anybody. It's not paid by anybody. It's an independent channel, as many of you have mentioned before, driven and fueled by passion, nothing else. And mainly myself, I record these things on Friday, and then I edit on the weekend. That's my weekend job. So thank you so much for everybody who's listening, who participated today, and to our wonderful, wonderful ladies and professional group that we have with us today. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I hope I get the opportunity to see you in person. I hope to get the opportunity to communicate with you one more time or a few more times. But thank you so much again for everybody. And from me and the panel, from Robin Ayoub and the rest of the panel, thank you, and we'll see you at the next episode.